55. One by one they fall. First, Miss Hackandutia banished the voices and images of madness from her head, one by one. Then she tromped through the rainforest, and, gathering what soldiers she could find, seven in all, she began the journey on foot to Port Douglas. The soldiers' minds were weaker than usual, but by pure force of will she drove them forward. Later she discovered Visser tangled in the roots of a gnarled mangrove tree, his eyes empty, the mechanical falcons on his arm screeching softly. She shouted at him until he got up and joined the band of weary travellers. They marched through the mud, the vines and roots, the murky water, and didn't stop to eat. She smashed branches aside, cut through vines with the extended nails on her metal fingers. At nightfall, two of the soldiers died, each struck through the heart with a spear that flew out of the darkness. This threw the rest of the troop into a muttering panic, and one ran screaming into the jungle. His scream was soon cut short. No one slept the rest of the night. In the morning, as they struggled on, a lieutenant trailed a few steps behind the group and vanished. A short time later, another soldier was struck through the heart by a spear. Miss Hackandutia had to give it to the natives. Their aim was impeccable, and they were as invisible and silent as snakes. By mid-afternoon, she and Visser were the only ones left to trudge over the stones in the gorge. Visser was still dazed, his birds clinging to his now bloodied arm. As they waded across a shallow section of the river, a crocodile grabbed Visser by the back of his neck and yanked him down. The falcons, too dumb to fly away, joined their master in his watery, bloody death. A second later, the crocodile's mate lunged at Miss Hackandotti's throat, but she slammed her metal fist into the beast's skull, and it sank, dead, to the bottom of the river. She ran along the banks. The natives were in the trees, but they hadn't struck for some time. She hadn't had anything to eat or drink for far too long and was growing weak, so she imagined they were waiting until she collapsed. But half an hour later, when the forest finally thinned and she sighted Port Douglas a few hundred yards away, she had one last burst of energy. A spear hissed next to her leg, burying itself in the red soil. She jumped over a bush, then turned her head to glimpse the blur of something near her head. By reflex, she caught the spear in her metal hand. She broke it in two and kept charging forward. Another spear cut along the side of her neck, merely scratching her. Then she was on a stone-littered road leading into the port. When she paused to look back, the tribe seemed to be gone. She stopped at the hotel to send two telegrams, the clerk following her instructions and watching her with wide, fearful eyes. She did not know if it was the blood, her unkempt hair, or her metal hand that intimidated him. The first coded telegram was to the guild master, reporting her failure and asking for the Kraken to rescue her. At least he would be pleased with the news that she still had Modo's finger in the tin in her pocket. This was the third time the permanent association had stopped her. There wouldn't be a fourth. She vowed she would rid the world of that organization and, in time, of the British Empire itself. Her second telegram was to her operative in London. When the agent at the other end deciphered her code, he'd be left with three words: "Burn Victor down."